Tuesday, January 12, 4:52 p.m. Children were playing. Parents were working. Millions of people were going about their daily lives.
For hundreds of thousands of them, they could not know that they were spending their last minute on this earth. 70 seconds later, a 7.0 earthquake would utterly decimate the country of Haiti.
We said when we broke the news live on the air that this was going to be bad. But nobody imagined just how bad. During the course of today's show, we will be listing relief agencies that you can donate to in order to help our fellow man. We here at the show ask that you give what you can. Even if it is just a dollar, it helps.
We'll start with the American Red Cross. 1-800-HELP-NOW.
This is Jim Alger, and this is Common Sense.
Oh, say, can you see?
Why do the Republicans hate America?
Their only play right now in Congress is to hope the Democratic Party fails.
The airport experience is an abomination, and the airlines, for example, have capitalized on our fear and on our worries.
America comes in 37 in terms of the quality of care and its affordability.
I can't afford health care, you know, as it stands.
I just want to say Congressman King is an idiot.
It's not even us in the U.S. It's us in China now.
It's us in China.
It's going to be us, Russia, and China.
It's the EU.
I don't know why in the world we would have anybody like this as a congressman to make such a blatant, idiotic statement.
Oh, please, Mayor Antonio, please shut up. Don't say anything. Just be quiet.
The insurance industry has been accused of running a shadow campaign here, pretending to cooperate on one hand, and yet funding the kind of accusations that we hear coming up in the mainstream media while disavowing and washing their hands of it.
We are in the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression.
The buzzword of the day is not torture. The buzzword of the day is enhanced interrogation techniques.
Can we just agree to call it torture?
Phone lines are open from Washington, D.C., 202-580-8514, 202-580-8514. From the rest of the United States, you can reach us at 415-762-1161. That's 415-762-1161. If you are joining us this evening from the United Kingdom, good morning to you. 020-3286-6728. 020-3286-6728 to speak with us live here in the studio.
Today on Common Sense, the Massachusetts special election is not looking good for the Democrats at all, and this could really be a problem in Washington. The late night war spilled into the streets yesterday. Mike Mitchell, the artist behind the I'm with Coco movement, will be joining us, as will C.L.N. Thompson, who is currently writing on this subject for the Minneapolis Tribune. And of course, we'll follow up on the disaster in Haiti and take your calls live. Welcome to Common Sense Radio, and we're going to come right out of the gate by picking up, unfortunately, where we left off last week when we went off the air, and that is with the disaster in Haiti. We will be, throughout the course of the show, giving people phone numbers and websites that they can go to if they want to contribute and help. And with the last segment of the show, we're going to be dealing a little bit more of what's going on in Haiti now. This has obviously turned into a much larger disaster than I think anyone could have at first imagined. And nothing we do here today should take away from what's going on in Haiti right now. I've got some experience in dealing with disaster zones. We are trying to put one foot in front of the other. We do try to remove ourselves from what's going on to a degree. And we are putting on a regular show today. But none of that is meant to take away from the horrible suffering that's going on as we speak. With that, I'm going to pivot over to another political disaster in the making, which is going on right now in Massachusetts with the Republican GOP candidate at 52.7% with the Democrat at 46.3%. This is Ted Kennedy's Senate seat that we are discussing. With me today is Jency. And Natalie, as always, say hello to the world.
Hello.
Not all at once.
I know. I was kind of pausing. I didn't want to speak over her.
Well, thank you very much, Jency.
You're welcome.
Jency, I want to get your take on this. Well, disaster for my party, I guess celebration for yours. In what is going on in Massachusetts, the Democratic Party basically completely came apart this morning and started pointing fingers at everyone. I find it, as a strategist, I find it difficult to understand why it is that with race looking like it was leaving the Democrats' hands, why they would have put Barack Obama up there this weekend, because I think now he kind of owns the loss.
Right.
But what's your take on it?
Well, you know, I was very hesitant to try to put a national spin on this election, only because I think you can end up kind of with your pants on the ground, so to speak.
I had to.
Okay. So if we were to say that this election, if Brown wins, this is a big mandate from the people of Massachusetts that can be considered representative of the country's dissatisfaction with Obamacare and Obama and the Democratic Party in general, then if you set it up that way and he were to lose, then it's a really lot of backtracking you got to do.
And I'm going to break in right here, and I don't know what AP is doing, but I'm going to go ahead and call this race. Brown has won it. He's won it. I'm sorry. I've done this for a living. It's over. You have 60% of precincts reporting, and Brown is at 53.7. It's over.
And really, okay, what I saw, though, in monitoring the conservative kind of messages on Twitter versus the progressive messages related to this race, there was such more of a united front by conservatives to support Brown, whereas it really put the progressives and the left on Twitter into really just, they weren't saying a lot of good stuff about Coakley. They were just trying to say disparaging things either about Brown or about the people that would vote for Brown or the people that were supporting Brown. You know, it was a lot of ad hominem attacks, and there wasn't a lot of, we want this woman in there because she's awesome, you know. So I think that's at least, that's my unscientific analysis via my Twitter friends.
Going back to what you were saying about if you spin it as a mandate from the people of Massachusetts as to what the country's feeling, then I think you're right, because the only mandate for what the only thing that the Massachusetts election is representative of is the way Massachusetts voters are feeling.
Right. Even though there were a tremendous amount of people across the country who were donating to the Brown campaign, who were making phone calls from their home on behalf of his campaign, who were, you know, putting the Vote Brown avatar, you know, in Facebook and Twitter and, you know, all of those sorts of things. If you don't live in Massachusetts and are not able to vote for Brown, then, you know, you're great. I applaud people that were doing that and supporting the campaign in that way, but they're, you know, it comes down to that voter.
I agree with you there, because, I mean, that would be like me campaigning for, I live in the constituency of Boston and Skegness here, and that would be like me campaigning for someone who was running for MP in London.
Mm-hmm.
No, it wouldn't make sense, because I can't vote in London elections.
Yeah, but the thing is, this has national implications.
Oh, sure, it does. And that's why I think that the good thing about social networking and social media and the internet is that it allows you to see how important other state races are to the overall decisions that go on in Washington. Because, somebody in the House or Senate is not just voting on something that affects their constituency in their state, but on all of us. So I think that it's great that we can donate our money and our time and our energy to other races. You know, so yeah, it does. But the people that at the bottom, at the end of the day, that are voting are people in Massachusetts who are looking at it from the standpoint of where they live and how it's going to affect them.
Well, yeah, it's always, you know, all politics is local. This has so many national implications. Of course, the GOP will be talking tomorrow about how they crushed the Democratic Party. No two ways about it. Ted Kennedy spinning in his grave tonight. The Democratic Party should not have lost this seat under no circumstances. The Tea Party movement basically just won their first election. And my hope to the Democrats out there is that this is a wake-up call. This is what community organizing is all about. This is what organizing for a cause is all about. We're going to be talking about that next segment with the on a totally separate issue, but the entire Conan O'Brien, Jay Leno situation. Massive turnout to support a cause. And if you are able to tap in to a group of people and get them to turn out, in this case, Election Day, then you're going to win. And the whichever side, be it Democrat or Republican, that chooses to be apathetic is going to lose regardless of what the issue is. And I think in this case, we saw where Republicans, Democrats both believed the seat was a Democratic seat. It wasn't going to go anywhere. Republicans didn't even nominate a strong candidate. It was kind of a throwaway candidacy. And then the Tea Party movement got involved. The GOP did a stealth campaign for the last 2 weeks, dumping nearly $500,000 into the state, you know, onto the radar. And now you've got the results of this. The results of this is the Democrats sitting on their butts and not, you know, getting to the polls. And this is how it happens with everything.
Can I just ask a question, Jim? If this is a victory for the Tea Party, why didn't the Tea Party candidate Joe Kennedy win?
I don't know the answer to that question. I do know that this candidate, Brown, tied himself with the Tea Party movement. And I think what you saw was people would rather vote for the R than the I, basically. They'd rather vote Republican than independent, because Republican and Democrat are the two main parties in the United States. And I don't think that people will like throwing their vote away, per se. It's the same thing as running for Green Party or, you know, Libertarian Party. These parties, generally speaking, don't win, you know, national races. And that's...
So kind of, so that would be, if an independent candidate won in America, that would kind of be like someone from the Monster Raving Loony Party winning the seat in Parliament. Yes?
No, well, what independent in the Senate is Bernie Sanders, and he's a self-proclaimed socialist. So you call that, we are already getting calls on for our next segment. We'll be on in a couple of minutes here with the next segment regarding the whole Conan thing. And Lieberman ran as an independent, but Lieberman is a known entity in the state of Connecticut.
Well, right.
So I think that this really is a wake up call, because to me it's very cautionary towards November for the Democrats. They could easily lose more seats. Now they're going to try and pick one or two up. I don't know in the big picture if this helps or hurts the Democrats. What I mean by that is the Democrats still have a majority of Congress. They just don't have a filibuster-proof majority. They really didn't have one before, as we already saw. So in the big picture, I don't know how much this is really going to change things in Washington. But symbolically, You just ceded ground, you know, in the Northeast, which has been a Democratic stronghold for quite some time.
Well, for all the talk, you know, of the Democratic majority and this, that, and the other, and all of the bills that are floating around that have not, you know, been voted on, my word, I think people are really, you know, the right's happy that there's not been a lot of concrete things done. in these major issues yet, but I think a lot of people are disenchanted with the fact that they are promised major change and they're just, you know, getting bits and pieces here and there. And, you know, I mean, you can make a case for both things, but I'm hearing a lot of people say we wanted more than this. We expected more than this.
I agree. And based on what our phone lines are doing and what they're on the phone for, we have a bunch of people who want us to get off this subject.
Okay. Yeah, so I do too. I'm so tired of it. Man.
That was our politics.
Coco.
We'll be with Coco in a minute. We're going to go to commercial. And we're going to go to commercial here, and we'll be back in 2 minutes.
The odds of having a boy who grows up loving baseball.
1 in 6.
Which earns him a college scholarship.
1 in 2,500.
That gets him a contract in the minors.
1 in 3,700.
Which leads to starting shortstop in the majors.
1 in 290,000.
The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism.
1 in 150. You know the odds. Now learn the signs. Go to AutismSpeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Common Sense Economics Rule Number 8. A corporation that makes billions in profits should not stick taxpayers with the bill for their employee benefits. Walmart's record profits have made the Walton family the richest in America. But because they fail to offer affordable health coverage to 700,000 workers, taxpayers shell out billions for government care. Why should taxpayers bail out a corporation making record profits? Walmart can afford to be a better employer. Now would be a good time to start.
I was raised Irish Catholic. We had Jesus on one wall and JFK on the other. I've always had an impassioned love for this country, even when I disagree with it. So many people like to wrap themselves in the flag, forgetting what it stands for. That beacon of hope for people who had so little reason to hope. A people who believe that we could leave our children a world better than when we arrived. None of us are perfect, but politicians seem to have a knack for hypocrisy. It's because truth gets left behind when they arrive in Washington, choosing to win instead of doing the right thing. We've all seen the worst of our country. I would like to show my children the best. That's why I'm here. Tune in to Common Sense with Jim Alger. www.getcommonsenseradio.com.
Welcome back to Common Sense Radio, 202-580-8514, 202-580-8514 from Washington, D.C., or really the entire eastern half of the United States. From the West Coast, you can reach us at 530-413-4511, 530-413-4511.
Today you may have heard about this, I'm going to leave the show in 09. Okay.
All right.
So let me explain how these things work. About 6 months ago, I sat down here with the folks at NBC, and they said, we want to re-up. And I said, okay, what do you want to do? Because I don't have a manager and agent. I like the people I work with. They're nice folks. And they said, and this is a high-paying job. Oh, it's a great paying job. But they said, listen, we would like to do 5 more years. I said, great. I'd love to do 5 more years. And that was 6 months ago. And then time went by. There's all talk about Conan O'Brien. Will he go to ABC? Will he go to one of these other networks? And they came to me and they said, we don't want to lose Conan O'Brien. I said, okay, what does that mean? And I said, we think Conan would be a good replacement, as I do. Conan is a gentleman, funny, the hottest late night thing out there. Excellent. And I said, you know something? I don't want to see Conan go anywhere else. I'm 59. I'll be 59 years old when this leaves. 5 years from now. That's 1,200 shows. I'm not going anywhere tomorrow. And I said, you know, there's really only one person who could have done this into his 60s, and that was Johnny Carson. I think it's fair to say I'm no Johnny Carson. So I called up my buddy. I called my buddy Jerry Seinfeld. I said, Jerry, what do you think, you know? And Jerry quit his show when it was the most popular. And I'm proud to say this show has been number one. We will keep it number one. And then in 09, I'll say, Conan, take it over. It's yours. Because, you know, you can do these things until they carry on in a stretcher, or you can get out when you still, you know, you're still doing good and think, I'm not quitting show business. You know, but I realize I'm not spending enough time with my cars. But anyway, this is not tomorrow. It's 5 years from today. And I want to say I don't think there's a better choice. Because, you know, when I took this show over, boy, there was a lot of animosity between me and Dave and who's going to get it. And quite frankly, a lot of what I thought, well, good friendships were permanently damaged. And I don't want to see anybody ever have to go through that again. Because this, you know, this show is like a dynasty. You hold it, and then you hand it off to the next person. And I don't want to see all the fighting and all and who's better and nasty things back and forth on the press. So right now, here it is. Conan, it's yours.
Funny thing happened on the way to Burbank. Apparently, Mr. Leno changed his mind because, as everyone knows, there's been a bit of a kerfuffle, to say the least, regarding the Tonight Show and everything else. And while what Jay Leno just said 5 years ago is fresh in your mind, I want you to compare that to what Jay Leno had to say last night on his show addressing this issue with Conan. So, Seth, if you could go ahead and roll Jay Leno now, that'd be great.
Folks, I thought maybe I should address this. At least give you my view of what has been going on here at NBC is still well. Let's start in 2004. 2004, I'm sitting in my office, an NBC executive comes in and says to me, listen, Conan O'Brien has gotten offers from other networks, and we don't want him to go, so we're going to give him the Tonight Show. And I said, well, you know, I've been number one for 12 years. They said, we know that, but we don't think you can sustain that. I said, okay, how about until I fall to number two, then you fire me? No, we've made this decision. I said, that's fine. And don't blame Conan O'Brien. Nice guy, good family guy, great guy. He and I have talked and had not a problem since then. That's what managers and people do. They try to get something for their client. I said at the time, okay, I'll retire just to avoid what happened the last time. Okay. So time goes by, and we stay number one up until the day we leave. Okay, but I'm leaving before my contract is out, about 6 or 8 months early. So before I could go anywhere else, it would be at least a year or 18 months before I could go and do a show somewhere else. I said to NBC, would you release it from my contract? They said, no, we want to keep you here. I said, okay. What are your ideas? They said, well, how about prime time? I said, well, that'll never work. They said, no, we want to put you on at 10. We have done focus groups. People will love you at 10. Now, look at these studies that show Jay's chin at 10. People will go crazy. I said, well, I don't know. It didn't seem like a good idea, Zach. I said, all right. I said, can I keep my staff? There's 175 people that worked here. They said, can I keep my staff? I said, yes, you can. Okay, let's try it. We guarantee you 2 years on the air, guaranteed. Now, for the first 4 or 5 months when you're against original shows like CSI, you'll get killed. But in the spring and the summer when the reruns come, that's when you'll pick up. Okay, great. I agree to that. 4 months go by. We don't make it. Okay.
All right.
Now, meanwhile, Conan, who we're not on, was not doing well. The great hope was that we would help him. Well, we didn't help many. Okay, so they come and they go, listen, this show isn't working. We want to let you go. Can I get out of my contract? They go, no, you're still a valuable asset to this company. How valuable can I be? You fired me twice. How valuable can I be? Okay. So then, let them say the affiliates are not happy. The affiliates are ones that own the TV station. They're the ones that sort of make the decision. They're not happy with your performance, and Conan is not doing well at 11:30. I said, what's your idea? They said, well, look, how about you do a half-hour show at 11:30? Now, where I come from, when the boss gives you a job and you don't do it well, I think we did a good job here, but we didn't get the ratings. Okay, so you get humbled. I said, okay, I'm not crazy about doing a half hour, but okay. What do you want to do with Conan? We'll put him on at midnight at 12:05. He keeps the Tonight Show, does all that. He gets the whole hour. I said, okay. You think Conan will go for that? Yes. Almost guaranteed. I said, okay. Shake hands, that's it. I don't have a manager, I don't have an agent. That's my handshake deal. Next thing I see, Conan has a story in the paper saying he doesn't want to do that. They come back to me and they say, if he decides to walk and doesn't want to do it, you want the show back. I go, yeah, I'll take the show back. If that's what he wants to do. This way we can keep all our people working fine. So that's pretty much where we are. It looks like we might be back at 11:30. Yes, I'm not sure. I don't know. But for all of this, Conan O'Brien has been a gentleman. He's a good guy. I have no animosity towards him. This is all business. You know, folks, if you don't get the ratings, they take you off the air. I think you know in this town you can do almost anything. You can get ratings, they keep you on the air. I wasn't getting the ratings, he wasn't getting ratings. That was NBC Solution. It didn't work, so.
And joining us right now is Mike Mitchell, artist who created and pretty much formed the I'm with Coco movement. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. I got to tell you, Mike, I was incredibly impressed. Yesterday, I had some appointments and things I had to get to, but I had the opportunity to drive past NBC Universal, and in the torrential rain in Los Angeles, hundreds and hundreds of people protesting and supporting Conan O'Brien. And this was, I drove past there and I expected to see five or six people out there. And you had hundreds and hundreds of people, over 400,000 and climbing Facebook fans following your movement. How do you feel?
Pretty good. A little tired, but I mean, it's been great. This week's been great. And the rally yesterday was really something, because I mean the rain, especially for LA, was so bad, and it was cold and miserable and windy, and I was worried that I was going to show up and there's going to be five people there, and I showed up an hour early and there was already 100 people there, so I feel pretty good.
Yeah, it ended up being a heck of a spectacle, and it wasn't just in Los Angeles, folks. It was in New York, Seattle, Chicago. I think there was a couple other places too that I forgot off the top of my head. And it really begs the question, and I asked you this earlier today in the pre-interview. What did you hope to get from this? What did you expect?
Well, originally, I just kind of wanted to just do it for myself and maybe eventually gain some support for Conan in this whole thing. And I did it before he released his letter saying that, he wouldn't go to 1205. But it was like the night before. So right when it came out, I think people really really grasped onto it and really ran with it. But before I had a chance to even like put some work into it, Patton Oswalt and Paula Tompkins were spreading it around and it just blew up in this crazy thing. But I didn't want more than just, this is far beyond what I was expecting. I would have been happy had I been able to, put a poster up somewhere by Conan's studio and then, maybe he would have seen it or something. That would have been good enough for me. And now we're talking on the radio about it.
Well, I opened up this segment playing Jay Leno then and Jay Leno now. In fact, that's exactly what I named the files. And it really is interesting to see the different timelines that are created. Back then, Jay Leno says that he was going to retire, really didn't want to do the Tonight Show into his 60s. In fact, made a comment that only one person could do it into his 60s, and that's Johnny Carson. This was – and then why after having that conversation – they came back and they were talking about Conan getting other offers and so forth. Now, if you listen to Jay, he flips it around the other way and he equates what happened back then to being fired. Now he claims he got fired again. How did you get fired?
It sounds like he was sort of promoted or like he was moved the first time because he resigned his position. And now he's being promoted because the show is canceled. If he does end up going back to the Tonight Show, that is, because it's a sweeter spot for him. He's going to get more viewers.
This is really taking the world by storm. What do you attribute the sensation to? I mean, I've got my own ideas. I'm just curious to know what you think as far as what really just has got everyone going.
I think it's a lot of things. I mean, it's obvious that there's more Conan fans than there are the people that actually watch it every night. I mean, he's just, he's a brilliant comedian and a brilliant writer. And, he's just so lovable. I mean, everybody loves Conan O'Brien. And, he's really somebody that, he's like the perfect guy to rally behind. Like, this all kind of came together because he's got such a huge fan base, and sadly, you know, not everybody watched him when they should have been, but, you know, that's where we are now. And I think it just kind of turned into this thing where, you know, people that were just kind of casual viewers or just, you know, kind of watched him once in a while, you know, started rallying behind him, because this is a situation. If you've had a job for more than a couple of years, or if you've had a couple of jobs, I mean, somewhere down the line, you're going to find a boss that puts you in a position that you don't want to be in. And you know, everybody can relate to this. I mean, I've had many, many bosses that I, you know, that have put me in positions that I didn't want to be in. And, you know, it's not always easy to have the integrity to walk away, especially when so much is on the line. And Conan did that, and he did it with so much, like, professionalism and class. I mean, you know, he's executed this whole thing so perfectly, and it's so easy to get behind him on it.
I think one of the things that a lot of people don't realize, and it's been very underreported, is that one of the things that Conan O'Brien's been holding out for is not his money. It's not his ability to go someplace else, because the reality is NBC is probably going to end up not paying him anything, and I'll explain that in a minute. It's for his staff. I mean, his staff uprooted from New York to Los Angeles for the promise of The Tonight Show, which, as Andy Richter described on his show the other day, was supposed to be bulletproof. And here he is, 7 months later, being told to pack up.
Yeah. I mean, and it's ridiculous. You know, he's getting these, I mean, they're basically tabloid rumors that, you know, that his staff's mad at him because, you know, because he's walking away with $30 million or whatever it is and leaving his staff unemployed. But, you know, they forget to mention that this is a guy that paid for his staff. You know, he paid his staff salary during the strike and, you know, kept them, you know, kept food on their table. And, you know, he's a company guy. He likes the people he works with. He loves them, and, you know, they love him. And, of course, you know, he's going to hold out. He's not going to just bail on them. I mean, these are people, like you said, they moved across the country. And, I mean, I moved across the country a couple months ago, and it's exhausting, and it's really a hard thing to do. And he had to deal with 100 people or whatever at the same time. You know, these are dedicated people, and you know, I think it says a lot about Conan. I think it's kind of sad that, you know, these things are being spread about him, that, you know, he's like this greedy guy that he's walking away with $40 million. But I think there's like a clause or something. If he gets picked up by Fox, he's going to lose all that money.
Well, it gets balanced out. I want to run to our phones here. 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. Eric from Arizona, you're on the air with Mike Mitchell and Jim Alter.
I'll say, first off, what you've done with the I'm with Coco campaign is great. And, quite frankly, I'm a little concerned. What Jay's done to Conan is just terrible, and I wonder, with Conan being off the air, what the fans are going to do in the meanwhile. Are they going to watch Jay? Are they going to boycott Jay? What you guys think is going to happen with Jay's ratings on the new show, and how that will relate to Conan?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't think there's going to be much of a shift in Jay. I think there'll be some initial interest, but from what I can tell by the demographics, and my wheelhouse is politics. This is kind of like politics, but it's a little bit different. To get this, what you see with Conan right now is kind of, you can really relate to what you saw with Obama during the 2008 election, how it just kind of grew organically into something that became much larger than life than you would ever think would have. I'm curious. I don't know if Eric's still on the phone. Seth, is Eric still here?
Yes.
Okay, Eric. I'm curious. What made you care? What made you decide that you want to put your quarter down and join this cause?
Well, I've been watching Conan for years and years, and what really made me side with him is what Jay said 5 years ago, that he was going to give the show to Conan and didn't want the same animosity that happened between him and Letterman. And going back on his word like that really put me on Conan's side. And if Jay had said from the beginning, you know, I don't want to give up the show and we'll have to come to that when the time comes, I would understand. For him to say, I'm fine with leaving the show, I'm going to give it to Conan with no problems, and then change his mind like this and do this to Conan is what really made me side with him.
Well, I mean, for Eric, it was really a matter of what's right or wrong. And Mike, have you seen that this has been the main crux of what people are saying, or is there something deeper?
Well, I mean, I think it's just a general love for Conan that's probably fueled by these things that, you know, like just what he said. I mean, I'm totally with Eric on that. It's just blatantly there. I mean, you played him right after another. He says, I don't want to cause problems for him. I want to give it over. I want to retire the seat to Conan. You know, all these things. And it's like what he should have just said instead of trying to, you know, be Jay Leno about it. You know, because he's tried to be Mr. Nice Guy about everything. You know, he should have just said, you know, Conan's going to be taking over in 5 years. And I'm not ready to give it up. But, you know, that's NBC's call. And when it happens, you know, it happens. And...
Well, I think one could argue he could have really been in a pretty good position back then to say, no, I'm not leaving. And it's up to you to decide whether or not you want to cancel the number one late show host that you have.
Exactly.
I mean, he was in a strong bargaining position at that point.
Yeah, and you know, he mentions in his the new interview or the new his new whatever, and he says, like, he's talking with NBC. The thing that, like, nobody's caught is, like, he says that he's talking to NBC, and he asks NBC, oh, is Conan okay with this? And they say yes, and he makes a deal on that. Like, he can't just call Conan and say, and talk to him about it. You know, like, it's such a big deal. Why are you just taking a word for it and just believing that Conan is going to be okay with Jay Leno leaning in for him for the third time in a row when he was promised The Tonight Show 5 years ago?
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I got to go to the phones here because the phones are just completely lit up. Stephanie from New York is on B3. Stephanie, welcome to the show.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I was at the rally yesterday at 30 Rock, and I was really amazed by how just the outpour. I mean, I guess I don't have a clear comment except just to say that I really support the program, or just support that what Matt has been doing, because, I mean, I've been watching Conan since I can remember, like probably like 11 or 12, and I remember growing up and not really knowing that many people who watched Conan, because it was kind of like the adult thing to do, or not the adult, but like the college thing to do, and I always heard so much about Jake and my parents and them, and I felt like just seeing all this love from someone that I've had so much love for, because I've been writing, I spent literally last semester writing my cover letter to intern for the show, and it's been really tough to try to swallow it with everything. And I've even emailed Brian Stack about trying to get into the show, and I've seen the tough toll it's had on the staff members, and I think it's just been a really important thing to show him and his staff, and but you know, everyone, that even though his ratings haven't been so great compared to Letterman, that there is still a huge amount of people who care about, like...
Well, Stephanie, let me ask you, how old are you?
I'm 19.
Okay. Is that maybe part of what this is? Maybe it's generational, that the younger crowd seems to relate to Conan O'Brien more than they relate to Jay Leno. I mean, you obviously have a little bit more of an interest in most people you've applied to be an intern on the show, and so it's I can hear it in your voice. You almost sound vested in Conan's success, and I'm curious, yeah, when you see all these people show up at 30 Rock and at NBC Universal and in Seattle and Chicago, what do you get as to why they're there if that's not correlating in ratings? I mean, it seems like the people weren't tuning in at 11:35, which is what created this problem in the first place.
I mean, like, he does, of course he does appeal to the younger generation. And I feel like I don't watch him on TV because I don't have a TV. Right now I'm in New York and I go to school and I don't don't have a TV, but I watch it on Hulu or something, and some people stream, and I feel like because the younger generation kind of refutes the normal Nelson rating scale, that could possibly be it. I mean, also the fact that he has kind of a not-so-good lead-in, I know it's probably just a huge factor as to, you know, the lower ratings. But,
Well, that's true, too, you know, the ratings for, you know, he's, like, NBC hasn't figured out this Hulu thing. Like, it's so big and so many people watch, you know, they watch Conan, they, like, stream Conan on Hulu, and they haven't figured out how to, like, make money off of that. Like, they're making probably some money, but they haven't figured out how to capitalize on it. And they're just kind of going with the old, like, safe for now. Like, Leno is the safe bet for, I mean, he might not be now. I don't think his show's going to do as well. But, you know, he was the highest rating, but he also has the highest median viewer age. And, you know, what's going to happen when these people start dying off? I mean, the prime advertising category is the 18 to 49. And that's where Conan destroys. He's like, he takes that, you know, wherever he goes, he's got the 18 to 49.
I absolutely could not agree with you more. I really think that that NBC has seriously underplayed the Hulu and YouTubing that's been going on. Eric from Arizona has been sitting on B2 for a while, waiting on us. Eric, welcome to the show. Eric, are you there?
We've already had Eric.
It says here Eric on B2. Okay, Eric's not here. All right. Well, we'll cut back to what I was saying. It does. I'm wondering. You know, as I put forth the question of what is behind this, is it generational or is it even political or what? And maybe it is all of the above. What amazes me though is when we look at the press coverage of all this. We're not seeing the general media, you know, call out the obvious. You know, why is it that Conan O'Brien had to put his chips down and say, I'm going to walk away, but Jay Leno did not. We're going to go to Deanna from California. And then we'll pick up Angie from Texas. So, Deanna, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hello.
I just wanted to sort of give my input. Just like I've been hearing callers, dedicated Conan fans, but actually, unlike them, I currently got into Conan O'Brien. Even I'm sort of surprised with the way that I'm, like, supporting him as a new fan, I guess you could say. But it just comes down to, he is more appealing to the younger generation. At the same time, I think what makes me support him even more is just how the way, how's this whole thing's turning out, how it's like they give him the show and then they're taking it away from him. I think it just comes down to, like, it just makes me kind of mad that they're doing that to him. So, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. Why do you care?
I don't know. I just think it's really unfair. It's like, who does that? Like, it's like you give... It's like the Tonight Show, like the biggest show, late night, you know, and it's like they give it to him and then it's like they take it away. Like, it's like, and it the frustrates me is it's like it's Jay Leno again and they have to like rearrange everything like for Jay Leno. And it's like, I don't know, it just sort of like, it's, I don't know, it just seems like unfair.
I completely agree with you that, Deanna, I mean, I've seen over here that British people are flocking towards Conan O'Brien. I mean, I've even seen T-shirts for sale on Cafe Press. I don't know whether you're responsible for that, Mike,
No, but Steve's.
So I'm with Coco t-shirts being sold on the internet. I think you need to register the trademark, Mike, so.
Yeah. Well, I run the Facebook page, the I'm with Coco one, and there's a lot of people on there. You can refresh it and it grows, every time you refresh it, and it was 400,000 a few hours ago. And it's 434,000 now, but there's constant, it's like spreading worldwide. Like there's constantly posts on it from people from just anywhere you could think of, and it's crazy just how universal this whole thing is, like, it's starting to become, it's ending up in England, and Australia is paying attention to this quite a bit. But then, it's like you get weird things like, Singapore and Poland and, just places you never would think Conan would even exist. And, it's a strange thing to happen. And it is kind of like this whole thing's kind of unraveling like a presidential campaign. It's like there's weird, irrelevant smearing that's going on and nobody's really focused on the important things. It's really kind of strange.
I think it's just down to the fact that Conan O'Brien's funnier than Jay Leno.
Oh, of course, of course.
Well,
go
ahead.
Jay Leno, the funniest parts of the show are generally parts that he's not in. I mean, he'll play a YouTube video, and it'll be the funniest thing it's the funniest thing of the night, or he'll have a comedian come on, and they'll just take it away. I mean, it's kind of sad. I mean, I feel like he's kind of like he's just kind of like a dumbed down comic you can fill in the blanks, but I just think, he's kind of a safe comic, and sometimes the show's interesting, but it's like, I'm not going to devote, any more time to watching it. I think he's kind of revoked those privileges. He's kind of made himself the bad guy, and he's trying to, I think last night his thing was just, it was damage control, and I hope not too many people bought it, because it's so obvious that he's just, it's so obvious that he's just trying to reclaim his throne as the nice guy, and it's been obvious he's kind of a Hollywood bad guy. Like he's either greedy or egotistical, and he never claimed any responsibility last night for any of the stuff that has gone down. He has not apologized to Conan and his crew, for bringing them out here, because frankly, I mean, it is NBC's fault, but Jay Leno has part of the blame, because he went along with this whole plan, and now there's a couple hundred people that are all doing what they love, and everybody loves them for doing it, and now they're going to have to find jobs, and now we don't get to watch, one of our favorite shows for who knows how long, if ever again.
Don't you think that Jay is just so much more plastic compared to Conan? Like, I feel when I watch Conan that he's telling it to me straight, whether he is or whether he isn't. He's just raw and authentic, and he doesn't
I hate to do this to you, but we have to get to a break here. We're already running over, and then we'll get Angie from Texas on the way back. Mike, if you want to stick with us for the next segment, we'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Sure.
All right, we'll be back in 2 minutes.
The right-wing extremist Republican base is back. They lost the election. They lost on the Recovery Act, the budget, and children's health care. They've lost the confidence of the American people after 8 years of failed policies that ruined our economy and cost millions of jobs. Now, desperate Republicans and their well-funded allies are organizing angry mobs, just like they did during the election. Their goal? Destroy President Obama and stop the change Americans voted for overwhelmingly in November.
It will break him.
I hope he fails.
This mob activity is straight from the playbook of high-level Republican political operatives. They have no plan for moving our country forward, so they've called out the mob.
And I want to know, why are these people ignoring his struggle?
Call the Republican Party. Tell them you've had enough of the mob.
The Democratic National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Common Sense Economics Rule Number 11. If a corporation makes record profits in this economy, they can afford to offer basic health coverage to their employees. Walmart makes $25,000 in profits every minute. Gives their CEO an $8 million bonus, but still refuses to offer affordable health coverage to 700,000 employees, nearly half their workforce. America's largest corporation can afford to be a better employer. Now would be a good time to start.
Welcome back to Common Sense Radio, 202-580-8514, 202-580-8514 from Washington, D.C., or really the entire eastern half of the United States. From the West Coast, you can reach us at 530-413-4511, 530-413-4511.
And we are back. We have Mike Mitchell on the phone. He is the creator, basically, of the I'm with COCO movement. I'm also going to bring into this conversation C. Allen Thompson, freelance writer, currently writing an article on this subject for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Mr. Thompson, welcome to the show.
Okay, Seth just put up a message saying we don't have
C. Allen. Okay, well, we'll try to get C. Allen back. And hopefully we will get him there. And in fact, since we don't have him right now, let me go ahead and take the caller, Angie from Texas. Do we have Angie from Texas, Seth?
Hi. I was calling in to comment on why I think that our generation is so, standing up for Conan in this. And I think it's really a matter of the injustice that's been done to him. And our generation is really big on standing up for injustices. I mean, we have tons of moments all the time to stand up for ourselves and speak for ourselves. And what's happening to Conan is something that somebody posted on the I'm with Coco Facebook page that it's something that Americans can relate to right now, the big corporations screwing over, you know, somebody. I know Conan's making, like, millions of dollars off of this, but they're also screwing over all of the families that went with them. And I think that really matters to a lot of people. And I also wanted to comment on the ratings thing. People are like, oh, well, if Conan did that good, then the ratings should be higher, and now, you know, they're not. So obviously he's the one at fault. But I think what NBC isn't realizing is that a lot of his viewers are from the younger generation. I'm 19. I'm in college. I don't have time to watch Conan every night, and I'm sure I'm not alone. I mean, we have tests and work and friends and just a bunch of stuff going on. So we're not going to be the dedicated viewers that Leno has, because the Leno crowd is the older crowd who have a set schedule. You know, they eat dinner at the same time. They get ready for bed at the same time. They watch TV at the same time, and then they go to sleep, you know. And, you know, they probably don't even watch Leno. They just, like, watch the news, and it leaves it on, and then they fall asleep while Leno's on TV. So it's not necessarily that.
I think that
you realize you just described the average evening in my house.
Well, I'm not trying to be offensive or anything. I'm just saying I think that's basically what's going on.
It's perfectly okay, and you know what? That is the point. We do have C. Allen Thompson back with us, and I did this really nice intro for you a moment ago, and you weren't there. So I'm just going to bring you right back on here live before we lose you again. Apparently, we had Mr. Thompson, who was scheduled to come on, but he was replaced by Mike. See, this is how this whole thing worked. But now we are rising up. We're fighting back to get Mr. Thompson back. I have to work long and hard to pull that joke off. So you're writing an article about this. We've been discussing it for a little while and taking a bunch of calls here. This phenomenon that's going on with Conan O'Brien, and I'll be the first one to admit being swept up into it. And I'm curious to know what you're seeing. You know, I've been asking the question a couple times, why do you care? I had to admire the... Go ahead, Mike.
One of the things I forgot to mention is that it's part, you know, like corporate greed and all that stuff, and, you know, just watching bad decisions happen at a management level. But it's also, like, you know, Conan has been, like, a very dedicated employee for, like, 17 years or whatever, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's publicly being, like, he's kind of an afterthought to NBC. Like, well, we're going to give Leno whatever he wants, and then, you know, you can take what we give you, or you can, you know, or you can just go your own way. And I think that that's another thing that kind of resonates with people. It's hard to see, you know, the kind of, it's kind of a faceless sort of corporate, you know, executive thing, and they're just kind of putting the hurt down on Conan, and I think it's just something people can relate to.
Oh, exactly. I mean, who can't relate to the employee who's getting, you know, pummeled by the company he's basically given everything to for 17 years, and he's been reliable, unlike Leno, if you ask me, but, and I really can't stand to see it myself, so I guess that's why everybody else can't as well.
Yeah.
I think that we are, one of the things that really amazed me was watching Ebersol claim that Conan O'Brien was a colossal failure. This is the guy who is losing projected at least $200 million on the upcoming Winter Olympics. He's losing more money than Conan O'Brien would have ever brought in the period of time that they're discussing here. And this guy's losing it in a matter of a couple of weeks. And for him to call Conan O'Brien the failure, when even celebrities such as Mariska Hargitay from Law and Order Special Victims Unit was just in a Seattle paper talking about how she believed that Jay Leno was almost single-handedly responsible for knocking Law and Order SVU out of the number one spot, because they had to move from 10 o'clock to 9 o'clock and then follow and then have Jay Leno follow afterwards. There's a lot of people that are not happy with NBC's move, and it does seem like they just kind of dug in their heels and said, this is what we're doing, and that's it. And I don't understand why, you know, that's gone on. I'm curious to know what a shareholder meeting at NBC is going to look like. But it certainly seems to me like there have been some decisions. I mean, moving... I mean, to me, and we only have about two more minutes left here. To me, there are two things that happened here that were the linchpins. I think number one was Jay Leno's desire to stay on the air beyond the Tonight Show. And I kind of equate that to, you know, running for and becoming president of the United States, winning, serving out your term, and then running for school board. And then two was NBC's reaction to try and keep everybody instead of just saying, you know what, well, if you want to go someplace, go someplace. According to Leno, he still had 5 months left on his contract. They could have bought him out of that contract if they were canceling the show. Then he said, I was guaranteed 2 years. Well, NBC was canceling his show. They could have bought out his 2 years and says, we're not going to keep you on. Let's all understand, for those of you who don't know, it was what triggered all of this chain of events was the local NBC affiliates who were getting killed in the ratings were threatening to jump ship and bail on NBC shows. Because of Leno. Not because of Conan, but because of Leno. So when you look at all of this, and a lot of you will forget, Conan O'Brien's been on the air 7 months. Jay Leno was on the air 7 months until he finally was able to find his sea legs. Now NBC cut Jay after 4 months. I think that might be a little bit preemptive. However, given what they were up against, I can understand why they would want to do it. They were going through a revolt. And to me, what bothers me about this is Jay Leno, and I've lost so much respect for the guy, is being so disingenuous about, you know, this aw shucks routine that he plays.
Yeah,
I'm just along for the ride. I don't really know what's going on. This stuff doesn't happen unless you're working to make it happen. You don't just – even his audience, when he said, well, sure, I'll take the Tonight Show, even his audience laughed. Mike, final word.
Yeah. Today I found something interesting today, and you know, I guess it's something good to leave with people. But Newsweek came out with their prediction, their business predictions for 2010. And at number 9, it was Comcast will fire Jeff Zucker. And – I think that, you know, I think that's a very likely possibility.
I unfortunately, guys, I'm going to have to let that be the final road, the final word here. Mike Mitchell, creator of the I'm With Coco movement, and C. Ellen Thompson, a freelance writer who's currently writing for the Minneapolis Star Tribune on this subject. Thank you very much for joining us today. We were supposed to have a segment on the Haiti disaster. Unfortunately, that got overrun by all the phone calls that we had. We are going to ask once again that you donate to agencies, relief agencies, such as the American Red Cross and the Salvation Army. Give what you can, even if it's just a dollar, guys. It really, you know, we talk about all this stuff on late night. This really matters. People are dying out there, and you know, they need all the help that they can get. So I implore you, pick up the phone, call 1-800-HELP-NOW, and do something for these people. And with that, we will be ending the show here. So I thank everyone, all the callers, and thank you very much.
This has been Common Sense. On behalf of Janie, Jensi, Natalie, Chris, Mike, myself, and the entire Common Sense crew, thank you for joining us. Common Sense airs live every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, with the internet feed stream beginning 5 minutes earlier, courtesy of BBS Radio. Episodes are available on demand via iTunes. For further information, visit the show's webpage at www.getcommonsenseradio.com. The Common Sense Radio Show would like to send a very special thank you to our engineer, Seth Hendrick, as well as our musical composer, Stephen Glossner. Until next week, stay safe, keep your head held high, and remember to always replace the spin with common sense. Take them home, Steve.